Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Step into the world of power, loyalty, and luck.
I'm going to make him an offer he can't refuse.
With family, cannolis, and spins mean everything.
Now, you want to get mixed up in the family business.
Introducing The Godfather at ChumbaCasino.com. Test your luck in the shadowy world of the Godfather slot.
Someday, I will call upon you to do a service for me.
Play the Godfather, now at ChumbaCasino.com.
Welcome to the family.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey everyone, welcome back to another episode of From Complex to Queens. Small crew today, just me, Lucas, and I'm joined by Thomas. How you doing today, Thomas?
I'm good. How you doing?
I'm doing all right. We're recording late on a Sunday night because at least my schedule is a mess and Ken is busy, and Thomas is the only one who can be relied on in any real way here. So kudos to Thomas and trade the rest of us, I suppose. Promote extend trade is going to be pretty simple, and I'm pretty sure I know the answer for Thomas already here. But it's softball season again, and as I'm sure I've bitched and moaned on this pod several times already, I can't really hit, but I really enjoy playing defense, and I'll play anywhere on the field. So we're going to promote extend trade our favorite defensive spots to play, and we'll just do it in three groups: catcher, infield, outfield. Go, Thomas.
Oh, I was a catcher for a long time, so yeah. That's my favorite. I love that stuff.
What was so appealing about catching that really, you know, tickled your fancy and kept you in the tools of ignorance, so to say?
I was, because I'm just in the game the entire time.
Yeah.
Like, obviously with other positions I could play, because I played second and third also. Mm-hmm. When I played, but
real early career Austin Barnes hours.
Yeah, I was like a backup infielder catcher type on travel teams and stuff. But because I also couldn't hit very well, but when you could catch, you will have your spots.
It's strange parallels to the major leagues here.
Yes, for real. But yeah, I liked being involved in the game. I liked calling pitches and talking to the pitchers on the staff about like what they wanted to do and stuff. And I found it really fun when you're in like travel leagues and you've played the same guys for a few times and you're like, oh, I remember this guy struggled when he threw this cutter last at bat, so I'm gonna remember that. Like that stuff I really liked because it kept me involved. Because when you're playing second or third or whatever, sometimes there's just games where you get one ground ball and you're just out there like, well, that was fun. But with catcher, that never really happens. And so that's what I really enjoyed about it. That was my favorite.
See, that's interesting because so I stopped playing in like second grade and I used to catch, but obviously you're not doing any of this high level thought when you're a second grade catcher. You're just trying to, you know, keep the ball in front of you and manage to throw it back to the pitcher every time, which isn't always that easy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah, especially at that age.
But the way hearing you describe it, and obviously like this is what major league catchers do too. Like that sounds like something I would have enjoyed a lot as well. Like the game, you really get into the mental aspect of the game, and you're yeah. constantly involved.
That's really what it was. It really felt like you were always thinking about something. Like you're looking at who's on first, and if you know if they're fast or not, then you could kind of remember if you need to care about steals, and then you got to worry about the pitches, and you got to worry about like having relationships with the umpires, because I would start to know them, and I'd be like, I would talk to them about things, and then I would ask where the strike was and if it was a strike or not, and I was like very conversational back.
You're such a people person.
I would do that all the time. Something would miss, and I'd be like, oh, where did that miss? Was that up or in? And they'd be like, please stop.
Kid, shut the fuck up. I'm being paid $10 an hour to sit here.
No, but I was there. I was going to ask them my questions every time.
I mean, so if I had played, I think I would probably be agreeing with you. I think my favorite spot to play is actually the outfield, though, because and the problems you talked about definitely apply. Like sometimes the ball's just not hit to you and you're not doing shit. But my favorite things to do, like I really love ultimate frisbee because you can run under the frisbee, right? And that's basically playing the outfield on, like you run under the ball, and that's a lot of fun. And I have a good arm too, which I like showing off, which is always a good, like it's very satisfying. Like making a great catch is fun, but I think the most satisfying thing defensively is throwing someone out when they didn't expect to be thrown out, because there's always this look of like bewilderment on their face, like wait,
yeah,
this was supposed to be a double or a triple and I'm out now, what the fuck. So that's always satisfying.
Yeah, that's fun. And that's similar to catcher, honestly. Like I used to try to back pick people all the time, and a few times I got people and they'd be like, for real? And I'm like, yeah, for real.
go sit down.
Yeah, exactly. It was great.
You sound like someone people would absolutely hate to play against, would probably very much enjoy having on your own. Real grit, the real grinder of the game here.
I was a real red ass when I played, in the best and worst senses of it. And
you and Jeff McNeil are truly kindred souls. Maybe more Brian McCann, since he was a catcher. Do you ever get in the face of a pitcher after he pimped a homer, you know?
No, there were a few times, though, when someone pimps a home run right in front of you and you're catching, like you could see it coming. Like there were a few times where I'd be like, oh, that's not good. Like midair, you're like, oh no, if he connects on that one, that's gone. And that bat went flying. I'm like, yeah, that's
so so you're saying you knew out of the pitcher's hand that he just threw an absolute dud of a pitch and it was getting crushed.
I could literally remember a single slider that someone threw. I can't even remember who threw it, but I remember it spinning and I was like, that's not gonna move enough. And my glove's like smack in the middle, and I'm like, I hope this kid misses it, and he did not. And he pulled it down the line, and I was like, whew, he smoked that ball. That was really funny.
I always had this question, and there are myriad answers to it, but I always felt like, or maybe it's a naive thought, but you'd think that catchers, you know, having spent all this time behind the plate, seeing a million more pitches than anyone else, you'd have pretty good, you know, pitch rec in the box. Did you find that is true?
I walked a lot. I just didn't hit with enough power to do anything. I would hit the ball, but I walked a lot.
See, that makes sense to me, and it would even make sense if you, like, couldn't make contact, but it feels like there's so many catchers, including, you know, defensively inclined catchers who are good at framing and such things.
Yeah.
Who just don't walk ever. That's never made sense to me.
It's like if anyone should know the strike zone, it's the guy framing it's the guy framing stuff every pitch.
And look, like major league pitching is very hard to do anything against. It's a different perspective, but you think like you'd have an innate advantage there because you're seeing so many more pitches than everyone else. But then again, these guys are also beat to shit and their knees don't work anymore by the time they're like 28. So
yeah, the physical toll, I think, of catcher is so hard. And like for especially professional guys, it's like they're working like overtime to, not only are they working in the box, they're working to like learn the pitching and learn the catch, the guys that they're playing with and stuff. Mm-hmm. Like, they have two jobs, where some guy who's playing shortstop or second base, like, yeah, they have defensive practice, but, like, it's not as in-depth. Like, of course they had to learn stuff, but it's not like learning a new position, which I think would be a little harder for a guy. But, yeah.
I mean, just you also have to think the job's gotten harder in recent years with mm-hmm. – for two reasons. First of all, you have a higher number of pitchers, and they're throwing more diverse stuff generally. So you got to learn more people and learn more things. You're also dealing with a bunch of guys who throw harder with less command than we saw like 10, 15 years. Like, oh, this must be great time for our fourth best reliever to come in and throw a bunch of 92 mile an hour sliders in the dirt. I'm gonna have fun with this.
Yeah, exactly. And I think also, like, if you even go back 10 years, maybe even probably longer than that too, like, it was a lot of this pitch like choices and everything that you're making back there is based on vibes. Mm-hmm. but now they're more based on, like, there's not science, I guess it is science and mathematics mm-hmm. behind this
data stuff. Science. Yeah
exactly, where you have to look at it in a different way than if you were some guy who's like, hey, kid's got a good slider today, and then that's kind of the analysis that you're making as a catcher. But mm-hmm. your game sheet, your game plan sheet is probably like the pitchers, where you're yep. talking about, like, statistics of the guys that you're facing today. That's a lot to remember and also be like, and I have to not walk. I mean, and I have to not strike out and walk more. You know, that's a lot. Yep.
I feel like we've seen a couple of the younger catchers that have come up over the last couple of years start to use those, you know, quarterback style playbooks on their wrist. Yeah. And that was something you never saw 10, 15, and to be clear, I'm not being old man yells at clouds. Like, that seems like a good tool to use. Great. But that, to your point, like, there's just a lot more complexity to keep in your head now.
Yeah. And I love that catchers wear that stuff, because, like, you can't expect people to remember every statistic.
Why the fuck
not?
Why the fuck wouldn't you be wearing it? Like, oh man, exactly. He's cheating. He's got the answers on his wrist. Like, what?
Yes, he does. Cool. Like, it's like in soccer, when you look at a keeper's water bottle and they have, like, the penalty statistics of where mm-hmm. they like to shoot their penalty shots. Like, that makes sense to me, because, like, you're in the middle of a game and all that stuff. You're not going to always remember every single piece of information. It's impossible. Unless you're, like, really, really genius smart, then it's like, what are you playing baseball for? Go be Lucas and work in the labs.
all this is reminding me, and this is a total tangent, of that, was it a Rays Blue Jays controversy where one of the catchers dropped his card and the other guy
It was 100% the Rays. I remember the Rays being involved in this.
I think it was the Jays catcher. It might have even been Tolley at the time, or maybe it was after him. Like, play at the plate, dropped his sheet, and then, like, Randy Rosarena or someone picked it up and just walked back
in his pocket. Yeah,
like, oh, I'll take that. And the Blue Jays got really pissed about it.
That's so funny.
Anyway, that promote extend trade veered wildly off course, but I think interesting to talk about the state of catching. And the TLDR, catching is hard. Playing the outfield is easy, but sometimes you don't get to do anything for the whole game. Let's move from that to our draft follows update. And just because I'm already talking, I'll roll into my guys first, then we'll have Thomas do his, and then Ken has pre-recorded his update for us this week. So my two guys were right-hand pitcher Michael Massey on Wake Forest and left-hand hitting outfielder Slade Caldwell from that's not his high school. That's the college he's committed to, Valley View High School in Jonesboro, Arkansas. I'll start with Massey. Since the last time we talked, it has not gone particularly well. He actually has only pitched twice, and it's been 2 weeks since our last episode. On the 10th, he went two innings. He gave up 3 runs, 1 earned, walked 4, struck out 3. This was against Duke, who, if I recall correctly, are now ranked 2nd in the country in baseball. I could be wrong on that. Wake Forest has had a bit of a disappointing start after coming into the season with a roster that was supposed to be one of the best ever assembled, and Massey has honestly been part of those struggles. He pitched again on the 23rd, so almost 2 weeks between appearances, and again only threw 2 innings, 2 walks, 2 strikeouts, no runs against Louisville, who are a good team but not on the same caliber of Duke. He's got a 1.08 ERA in 16.2 innings, 27 strikeouts, 9 walks. So there's also 4 hit by pitches and 2 wild pitches in there. So it's not disastrous, but I think there are some real negative markers here. We're talking about a guy who'd worked previously in relief, moving into the rotation. He's averaging fewer than 3 innings per appearance right now. The stuff hasn't looked quite as good in the rotation. He's not really being stretched out. The control is evidenced by all the walks and wild pitches, a little suspect at the moment. As a result, he fell down BA's board in their last update. He's in the 50s now. I'm not out on him by any means. Wake Forest is very good at helping these guys improve, and it's only 16 innings into the season, so yeah, plenty of time for him to bounce back. That said, you know, if you asked me now who a pitcher I'd be looking at for the Mets at 19 is, I'd be much more likely to say someone like Yesavage or someone like that as opposed to Massey. But there's a lot of raw clay to work with here and time for it to bounce back. So not declaring this one dead just yet. On the flip side, Slade Caldwell is off to a stupendous start in high school. I still can't exactly find a consolidated page of his stats, but as of the 16th, he was hitting 500, 593, 786 with 2 triples and 13 steals in only 7 games. Yes, that's almost 2 steals per game.
That's crazy more than anything else.
it's absurd. And since then, so these were his stats as of the 16th. On Thursday and Friday of this week, he homered in both games. So safe to say that the early season performance here has been very impressive. People are already throwing around Corbin Carroll comps, probably because he's a short, left-hand hitting, a high-energy outfielder, very fast, probably not a true center fielder due to a lack of arm strength. This is all very Corbin Carroll-coded. I have no idea if he will be as good as Corbin Carroll. He almost certainly will not be. But the arrow is firmly up here. He moved up to 31 on BA's most recent update. He was also picked by the Astros at 28 overall in their most recent mock draft. I believe that was on the 18th of March, and he's only improved since then. Some of the more reasonable comps aside from Corbin Carroll that are being thrown around, I've seen Dylan Head used as a comp a couple times. He was a prep outfielder taken by the Padres last year. A lot of speed, a lot of defense in center. I think Caldwell has a good deal more power projection than Head, which isn't to say that Caldwell has a ton of power, but Head really has none. So all this is to say that, you know, as much as we can glean from a couple weeks of high school stats without, you know, a consolidated full picture of the stats, things are looking really good here. And if this continues, he very much might be. There's an outside chance he's off the board by 19. So definitely a name to keep an eye on. I'm at least 1 for 2 on that front.
Yeah, right, Thomas. Seems like he's really making a name for himself.
I feel like you and I would probably go gaga over this guy because he's going to be like a short guy who just plays super hard and very much it's really Drew Gilbert coded to me, and Gilbert probably has more power. But and certainly, like, Gilbert has a tremendous arm defensively, and Caldwell, that's almost certainly his weakest tool. His arm's a bit of a pop gun. But I frankly, that's probably the least important tool to worry about. So
yeah, if you have one thing that's not great and it's your arm, I'm okay with that. Like, it hasn't hurt Brandon Nimmo's outfield career. So
no, yeah, exactly. And like, I think if he's capable of playing center field, that's fine. If he's got plus range in the corner, the arm is much less important than the range, frankly. So this pick's looking good, worth keeping an eye on. Hopefully I find a better place to keep us updated on the stats, but a lot to be excited about here.
Yep.
All right, go ahead, Thomas. Take us through your two.
Okay, so I'm going to start with Cam Caminiti first because his numbers are hilarious, and I forgot to do his independent game logs, but it doesn't really matter. You'll see why when
this should be good.
Yeah. He has made 5 appearances in his senior year in 2023-2024. He has a 0.3 ERA in 23 innings.
Okay, so he's given up 1 run?
Yes, he has good. 9 hits. He has three unearned, two unearned runs and one earned run.
So if people, if high schoolers can't play defense, shockingly.
It was a home run, though. Someone hit a home run off him. So yeah. I'm sure that dude is probably, like, posting it every day on his Instagram story, as I would.
That dude's going to be telling stories in, like, 20 years. He's going to be in, like, middle management at some insurance company. Be like, oh, man, back in high school, I hit a homer off a first rounder this one time. It was sick.
It's like the guy who homered off Joe Mauer.
yeah, there you go.
He's walked 8 people in these 23 innings and struck out 55. So he's pretty good. He's also hitting .548.
Cool.
Yeah, he's not. I don't think he's going to be a two-way player. I think he's pretty much a pitcher, but it's one of those things where he's just better than everyone that he's playing
against. How many strikeouts did you say that was?
How many strikeouts has he have? He has struck out 55 batters in 23 and two-thirds innings.
Just a casual 21 and a half K9. No. Jesus crazy. Christ.
So yeah, that's how he's doing. And Kalen Culpepper's had a strong season so far. He's hitting .341, .447, .577. But this week was a little, I wouldn't call it bad. He went 5 for 18, but they were all, I believe they were all singles. No, he hit one double. So it wasn't like he was just kind of survive like floating this week. You know, he had one of those weeks where he wasn't tearing the cover off the ball. But you'll take 5 for 18 as a quote unquote slump. Like that's perfectly acceptable. It's just it kind of happens sometimes type thing. Mm-hmm. And he's kept playing shortstop and he hasn't made an error in since early March. So I know errors aren't like the best way to look at defense. There's a lot of other things that we have to contextualize with it and talk about range and all that stuff. But for a guy who just is just learning that position and just moving there for the first time this year after being a third baseman, that's nice to see that he's shorthanded when he gets to the ball. He's a good third baseman. So I'm not surprised that he could play short at the college level. I don't know if he would. When he gets drafted, I feel like the team would move him back because I think he's a good third baseman. So I don't really see the reason to move him, but you never know. You never know if he takes the position and then just kind of stays there. Some team optimizes him, you know how that is. But yeah, he's had a kind of I wouldn't call it a down week, but it was kind of an average week. 5 for 18 is what it is. No home runs, only one double. Didn't walk much this week, but he had one walk this week only, but he's been walking fine this year, so I'm not really concerned about that. I think it was one of those things where he just had a bit of a slower time than normal. But I think he's a good player. Like, I'm not worried about him by any means. I think he's a good prospect.
I mean, BA certainly agrees with you. Culpepper went 18th to the Rays in their most recent mock.
Yeah.
And Caminiti, this makes so much sense, honestly. Caminiti went 25th overall to the Padres.
Oh, my God, that'd be, yeah.
It's like AJ Preller heard K9 over 20. Sign me the hell up. Absurd high schooler that I can draft. I love it. Please.
Also, nephew of a Padres legend. Hello.
Is he?
Ken Caminiti, right?
Of course. The Padres? Yeah, I think so. I think you're right there. I'm very bad at baseball history, admittedly. So
he did. He played for the Padres.
All right. Yeah. The bloodlines all line up here then. Okay, so you're 2 for 2. I'm like 1 for 2, not great. We'll let Ken splice in his segment here, and then we'll come back with an early preview of where to find the Mets prospects throughout the rest of the season.
It is Ryan here, and I have a question for you. What do you do when you win? Like, are you a fist pumper, a woohooer, a hand clapper, a high fiver? I kind of like the high five, but if you want to hone in on those winning moves, check out Chumba Casino. At chumbacasino.com, choose from hundreds of social casino style games for your chance to redeem serious cash prizes. There are new game releases weekly, plus free daily bonuses. So don't wait. Start having the most fun ever at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void or prohibited by law. See terms and conditions 18+.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
So Carson Bench had a pretty good week on the mound, although he did give up his first earned run of the year, and kind of a rough week at the plate. Pitching, he made two appearances, one against Missouri State and one against TCU. He threw two innings, gave up one earned run on two hits, and struck out four while walking none. So despite the earned run and the two hits, you know, his whip was almost exactly one, and, you know, four Ks in two innings is pretty great. So I'd say he had a pretty good week on the mound, although maybe not quite perfect. On the season as a pitcher, he's thrown 6.1 innings in relief, has given up three hits, one earned run, and struck out 10 hitters against two walks for a 1.42 ERA. So having a pretty good season on the mound as Oklahoma State University's closer. With the bat, on the season, he's been very good. This past week was kind of rough. He played in four games, like I said, against Missouri State and TCU. And in those four games, he went a combined 2-for-13. He hit one double and walked five times against three strikeouts. So he hit a 154, 368, 231 line across his last four games this past week. So not great. Still getting on base at a good clip, but you know, low batting average, low slugging, and you know what that line is really indicative of me is he's probably being pitched around quite a bit. Anytime you walk five times across four games, you know, I would think that being the best hitter in the Oklahoma State lineup, he's probably getting a good amount of pitch arounds. Despite his down week, on the season, his line is very good. Across 93 at-bats in 24 games, he's hitting .333, .448, .548. He's hit three home runs, 13 total extra base hits, walked 21 times against 14 strikeouts, so he's still walking more than he's striking out, you know, by a significant margin. And his strikeout rate, just under 12%, walk rate, just under 18%. So kind of the stuff you'd expect. You'd hoped for a little more power, but he's still, you know, hitting the ball. He's hit for a little bit of power, and he's still getting on base at an extremely good clip. So I'd say stock relatively even. I think he's a stretch for the Mets at 19. I think he's more likely to go in like the comp round or towards the end of the first round. But, you know, kind of doing Carson Bench things, even if you'd hoped for a little more this past week, say stock maybe down a little to more or less even. Drew Beam, on the other hand, had a bit of a rough week. He got hit around in his only start against Ole Miss. He gave up four runs, three of which were earned on six hits and five and a third innings pitched. Struck out five, didn't walk any, but the real rough part of his line is he gave up three homers in the game against admittedly good team in Ole Miss. So not really what you want from a guy who's, you know, pitching in an elite college conference and is trying to solidify his place as a first-round pick out of an elite college conference. On the season, he's now started six games. He's thrown 35 innings, given up 15 runs, 13 of which have been earned, Struck out 31 against four walks, so excellent strikeout to walk ratio. He's given up four home runs, which is a little misleading given that he gave up three in the game against Ole Miss alone. His ERA has ballooned to 3.34, so still pretty good. He's striking out just under eight batters per nine innings, which is not as much as he'd like, but limiting his walks to just over one per nine innings. So very good control, even if he's not really missing the kind of bats you'd hoped for, and even if he's getting hit a little harder than you would have hoped for. So probably a down week. He might be a bit of a stretch for the first round in general. Might settle in closer to like second or third round consideration, but not exactly a good week from a guy who is trying to solidify himself as a first round player out of an elite college conference. So not a great week, but his ERA is still good on the year, and his walk strikeout and walk numbers are just immaculate. So wouldn't kill him too much. I'd say his stock is probably slightly down, but certainly not up.
Okay, and we're back. So we've gone through our draft follows. We waxed poetic about how to play catcher's defense. We'll come back next week with bold predictions for the minor league season. But this week, because I'm working on the article for the site, I thought we'd talk through where we expect the most interesting prospects in the system to wind up in terms of affiliates and what to look out for there as we go forward. So we'll step through each of the five affiliates. We're not going to dissect the DSL because that's an exercise in futility, and just run through the top 25 names and anyone else we expect to be there. So starting at the top with the Syracuse Mets, all of these names are going to be very familiar to you. We've got Drew Gilbert in the outfield, ton of talent on the mound with Christian Scott, Mike Vassell, Jose Buto, Dominic Hamill, Nate Lavender in the bullpen, as well as outfielder Matt Rudick, also in the top 25. And another name I threw in here, second baseman Rylan Bannon, who is an interesting post-hype minor league pickup who had an interesting spring. Anyone else you think I've missed who's likely to be on the Syracuse roster here, Thomas?
Well, G-Man Choi is not on here.
And I'm How can I forget G-Man Choi?
No, I think you got everyone for Syracuse because I'm looking at it too. I like adding Rylan Bannon because he might be better than Joey Wendell right now. he looked pretty good, honestly.
Hey, Zach Short might be better than Joey Wendell right now.
Zach Short looked pretty good this spring, too. I'm not going to lie to you. Like, I'm not mad that he made the Mets, to be quite honest. As a 26th man, he makes a lot of sense for the roster construction with J.D.
Martinez. Yeah, I mean, Zach Short on the roster. Like, look, if Zach Short was going to be on the roster all season, that might be mildly annoying.
Yeah,
on the roster for, like, 2 weeks until J.D. Martinez is ready. And, great. Perfect.
Yeah,
no complaints with that whatsoever.
That's fine with me. He might be an up-and-down guy. Maybe gets taken off waivers, and then that's Rylan Bannon. But Bannon is definitely someone to keep an eye on because I think we will see him in the majors, even though I wouldn't call him a prospect.
No. It's always interesting to see these post-hype guys and see where they've been before, especially if they've been passed around smart organizations, right? Like, he's played for the Dodgers, the Astros. There was another good team in there, and I've lost it from my notes. But generally, like, I think these guys are more worth looking closely at when you see teams that generally know what they're doing continually try to take a shot. Oh, wow, it's even better. Originally Dodgers, that was way back in 2018. Baltimore, Atlanta, the Astros, and now the Mets. So, I mean, these teams
there's
generally
some reason why all these teams are
exactly
flagging him. There's something going on.
The example I always point to for this idea is when the Mets rage cut Travis d'Arnaud, the two teams that immediately picked him up were the Dodgers and Rays, and then he landed with the Braves. Like, huh, these teams...
Yeah. But also, like, maybe that's what the Mets are now, because now we're getting into a different thing. But Johan Ramirez looks great. And it's like, well, yeah, because he was with the White Sox before and they didn't know what they were doing. And the Mets kind of have a clue with pitching. So and that's how you reap those rewards. So hopefully the Mets are going to be this team now.
Has he made? I've been a little busy over the last couple of days and didn't keep up with the roster announcements. Have they announced who's made the bullpen? I know Fujinami got optioned, and he arguably should be mentioned here as well, but I wouldn't call him a prospect strictly. So Ramirez might still wind up making the major league bullpen. At least in terms of the prospects here, a lot of these guys are going to see major league time, right? Like, how long is it before Gilbert and Scott are in Queens?
I think it's cleaner for Gilbert to come up than Scott because there's so many. Because I think Buddha might come up before Scott just based on.
That's fair.
Buddha's been in the majors before and he already was pretty good last year at the end of the year. So
is Scott even on the 40?
I don't think so. And I think Buddha is. So I think that's not the hugest thing in the world. Like some guy gets hurt and you could 60-day IL him if it's that bad or IL. But I think Buddha might come up before Scott. But I think Gilbert is. The guys who are standing in his way are Bader, who can't stay on the field, even though I think he's a pretty solid player, and Marte, who can't stay on the field and might be cooked. So there's a very clear path for Drew Gilbert in like a month and a half, like six to 8 weeks if he has a good start to the season. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I think I could see multiple people, like maybe all of these guys come up at some point, even Rudick, if it's like that bad and people get hurt and stuff. I think Rudick's kind of down on this totem pole because of someone like Gilbert. Like you just want to call up Gilbert first, but like Hamill could be a reliever, Vassell could come up to start or even relieve. Buddha could be up there in the rotation. Scott too. Lavender should get a shot when there's a availability. But yeah,
Lavender feels like one of the few good optionable relievers they're gonna have. So he's gonna be the guy that gets shuttled back and forth a bunch when they need fresh arms, I would think.
Yeah, I could see that. I could see someone going on the IL for 15 days and Lavender comes up and looks pretty good, but then there's no – well, it's too – sorry, buddy. Everyone else, we would have to cut DFA, and we don't have to do that for you. So we'll see you in 3 weeks.
I mean, the guys who you expect to come up and stick, I mean, it's very obviously Scott and Gilbert, and I quite like what Buddha looks like at this point too, and I would hope that he would come up and stick, but the Mets rotation might just be too full for both him and Scott, you know?
You could also make the case that Scott and Buddha are part of the top five of their rotation right now, and they're just leaning towards vets because that's kind of what the
It's not egregious. I don't think it was egregious to put McGill in the rotation to start
the season. I don't think so either.
It's not like they
– But I'm talking about on talent-based. Them over him, but I also think that every single team puts McGill over these guys in the rotation to start the season just because that's how things work in, with real people. It's like you can't do that to McGill, otherwise it'll ruin the relationship.
Yep. And like you can make room for these, like you can option Tyler McGill if he's not playing well. You can ditch Michael Tonkin and put Adrian Hauser in the bullpen. Guys will get hurt. Like there will be options. You could do.
Yeah.
Sean Reed Foley is either going to get hurt or pitch like Sean Reed Foley.
There's going to be openings for sure. And I think that there's enough interesting players that the openings will be filled with actual interesting players for the first time in a really long time.
Yep. Well, I mean, to that point, this is the bet. Like, we've talked of, I think I've made this point in recent years, and I think it's generally been indicative of the positive direction the organization is going in, even prior to Stearns. Like, every year it feels like, wow, this is a lot more pitching depth than we're used to seeing. Mm-hmm. This is an absurd amount of pitching depth to have. Like, the Mets have arguably some of the best pitching depth in baseball. They don't have necessarily the top-end talent in their rotation, especially with Senga hurt. But, you know, they legitimately have, like, another 4 to 6 guys in the minors who are fifth starter caliber or better, which is huge in modern baseball.
And that's like and that's something that you always think that it's you won't need it, and then you realize when it's July that you've needed all of it.
And when this is starting like, Jared Eichhoff.
Yeah, exactly. It doesn't even mention a returning David Peterson, who will be in this mix at some point, whenever he comes back from his hip injury, right? It was his hip.
Hip labrum. Yep.
But like they're running like 11 deep in a rotation, and it's funny because the best pitcher outside of Senga is like a 3 or 2 at best. It's so funny, in the rotate, like a second or third best starter in a rotation. Mm-hmm. It's very funny the way it's set up, but it'll probably be good enough, which is what you need really.
All of this is to say that the Syracuse roster He's a bit lacking offensively, and I won't waste our time talking waxing poetic about Matt Rudick, who I love and actually is back. We saw him finally in a minor league lineup.
He's
alive, and I'm excited. I hope he gets a shot at some point this season. It sure doesn't. I would not expect Gilbert to be here for long at all. And after that, the offensive talent really dries up until some of the guys in Double A get promoted. But at least based on what's starting here, it's going to be a little thin.
I also, that's indicative to the system as a whole. Like the pitchers are the better. It's just the pitchers are the strength of the organization right now.
And frankly, like the Mets, this is okay because the major league side is fairly full on the position player front. Like Brett Beatty, Francisco Lindor, Jeff McNeil, Brandon Nimmo, Pete Alonso, Francisco Alvarez. That's like the majority of the position player spots locked down to some degree or another for this season at least. So. They're in an okay spot on that front. Moving down to Binghamton, we have another pretty good roster here, honestly. Headlined by Jett Williams, who's probably we have as the best prospect in the system. Luis Angel Acuña, Blade Tidwell, and Tyler Stewart on the mound. Then you get to some more questionable guys. Kevin Parada finished the year in Double A. I think they probably pushed Stanley Consuegra up to Double A at this point. Yoander Suarez, I would think, goes to Double A. Anyone else I'm missing on that list? That's who I jotted down here for the Binghamton Mets.
I can't think of anyone. Like, Binghamton's in a weird spot because I feel like Binghamton's in a weird spot all the time, every year, every time we talk about this, because like Jett and Acuña are really, really the top two of the top end talents in the system. And then after that, it's kind of like maybe with Tidwell and Stewart, like we like them, but how much do we like them? And then Parada, this is a make or break year for him almost.
Yep.
And Suegra is like a back end of the top 25 guy, mid to back end of the top 25 guy. Suarez is interesting, but not like we're not talking about him in the same breath as the other pitchers. Like, yeah, it's just kind of a lot of – I'm more excited about Brooklyn, which we'll get to in a second. But, like, Binghamton I'm excited about because I'm excited about Williams and I'm excited about Acuña. That's really what I'm looking for with Binghamton. And I think both of those guys will not be in Binghamton all too long, maybe half a season, before they're up in Syracuse. And then we're talking about them knocking at the door of Queens, which I would assume more next year than this year. But you never know what happens in September if guys take really big
Shots. It would be shocking to see, like – the Mets would probably, barring either of them, and especially Jett, like barring like an absurd breakout and the Mets needing him in a playoff race, it'd be probably pretty stupid to call Jett up and let his rookie eligibility expire this season. Like I fully expect him and Acuña to be in AAA, you know, after the All-Star break, something like that, and maybe they get a cup of coffee late. But you want to hold on to that rookie eligibility so they're in line for a comp pick in 2025 as they come up and win a Rookie of the Year award or something like that.
Like Paul Gervais, who might be in who
I
might be
should
there.
Have included Paul Gervais. That's a good call. I honestly think I find him more interesting than some of the other arms here.
But Junior Santos looked pretty good as a reliever. Like
we're not doing more Junior Santos.
I know. But it's just kind of interesting, like in a weird way. It's interesting and like a maybe instead of an interesting as a yes, this is like a legitimate guy that we're talking about for the Mets. It's more an interesting as like we'll see.
I'm so tired of Junior Santos. Well, on the mound does have some sort of an interesting conundrum here in that, you know, Blade Tidwell and Tyler Stewart are both a little bit older and had decent surface level results at Double A. Stewart kind of stopped missing bats and Tidwell kind of can't throw strikes. We've talked about their warts before. But I'm looking at this organizational depth chart here and wondering, like, okay, let's say Stewart and Tidwell come out and perform well. Are they getting promoted? There's no room for them in the AAA rotation.
Yeah, maybe not. Like, unless guys, they might be a thing where they're waiting for a promotion for when Scott and Budo get promoted and they just kind of take their place.
Yep.
But that might not, who knows when that happens because of how deep the Mets starting rotation is in the majors. Mm-hmm. Like there's a decent possibility that we're 2 months in and we haven't even need to see the sixth starter because everyone's healthy. Of course, there's a decent possibility that three dudes got hurt and Christian Scott's up in late April because he's pretty, Yeah.
You're starting Vassell, Budo, and Scott. You know, it's great. It's
both of those things are possible, but I think that's something that we will find out as the season goes on. These things kind of happen. These questions kind of answer themselves at some point. Like,
I would
guys are going to get hurt. Guys are going to pop. Guys are going to be worse than you think. Like, you never really know.
I wonder what the inclination is to push a guy like guys like Tidwell or Stewart to the bullpen, given the crowded rotation in the upper minors.
I want them to do that with Hamill because he's close.
See, I like Hamill as a starter more than Tidwell and Stewart is the thing.
Yeah, but I think Hamill has like good reliever potential, which means that he's probably a better starting pitching prospect than those guys. Because, but it's a tough question to ask, and also it kind of depends on what the vibes are in August.
Like, yeah, is Tidwell walking a million dudes? No, who knows?
Is Hamill not walking a million dudes anymore? Like, to begin last year, and then he cut that out as the season went. Like,
is he going Levi David mode? So this roster is definitely a little bit thinner than Syracuse. It's weird to say because I love Jet, and he's the best prospect in the system, but this is probably my least favorite roster to watch at the moment. I don't know if that's crazy to say, but you know, I'm a little bit lower on Acuna. I don't particularly like Tidwell or Stewart or even Suarez. Kevin Parada. I don't know. Like, I think there's more interesting things happening elsewhere in the system.
I agree. Because I think they're just in a Double A always feels like the transitionary period to me. Where the guys who you were really excited about in Brooklyn or High A, wherever it may be, are a little worse than you think or a little better than you think. So you get either more or less excited about them when they get moved up. And then by the time they're in AAA, it's either they're a legit prospect or they're just kind of like a guy. Mm-hmm. And so I think AA is always, for me, in my head, I always think of it as that, like, that's the real, like, pivot point between this guy is now, like, we're talking about him, like, he's going to come up soon, or we're like, damn, I really liked him, and what happened? Like, where did I miss, or where did it go wrong? Like,
where did it all go wrong?
Yeah.
Okay, well, that's enough about Binghamton. Let's move on to the roster that you alluded to as being more interesting, and that would be the Brooklyn Cyclones. I think there are some names I'm missing here, so I will let you fill in the gaps as I go. On the position player side, I've got Ryan Clifford and Jacob Reimer, both, you know, very interesting, as well as Alex Ramirez, who probably still needs more time with Brooklyn.
Yes, he definitely does. And I think it's still important to put him here, even though we're a little down on him.
More than a little. On the mound, there's going to be some interesting talent, and I don't think I have all the relevant names. Brandon Sproat, Nolan McLean, Leonel Avalas is probably here as well, even though stock definitely down from last year. Maybe Cade Morris or Zach Thornton. I'm not sure where they start out initially. What's got you so excited for Brooklyn here, really?
I'm Nolan McLean pilled, Lucas.
Oh, yes. So I have to admit, being one of the big detractors, I'm into.
Did you see the pit? Did you see how good he looked in spring? Oh, man. It's like,
disgusting.
I don't think he could hit. And I know he hits for a lot of power, but I don't think he's going to make enough contact. And I understand that they probably should let him try. But, man, he looks disgusting on the mound. Like, I
think
I don't
we can amend your statement there to you don't not think he could hit. He can't hit.
Yeah,
he cannot.
He hits for a lot of power, but it's just I don't think he's not going to make enough contact. But the pitching, he looks legit. And that's really exciting because that's the type of bump that the organization just didn't get from a guy where everyone was kind of like, okay, like, sure, talking about him post-draft. And then he went away and worked with the Mets for like 6 months or 8 months, whatever it was. And then he comes back and he looks like a completely different guy. You know what I mean? Like, he looks like they actually made real strides with his stuff, and his stuff looked really dirty. So I'm excited about him. Sproat, I'm excited to see if they could work their magic with him the way they did other guys so far, because there's a lot of
I mean, Christian
like
Scott's
mold.
The right parallel, right?
Exactly. And look at what Scott ended up. And you could argue that Sproat was even a little bit of a better college pitcher than Scott was, you know?
Oh, certainly.
Sproat
yeah.
was So, like, if there's more ceiling to be had because of the Mets pitching development now, that's a great thing to – that's a name to definitely keep an eye on, and I'm curious to see how he does. But, yeah, I'm excited because of McLean. I'm excited because I think Clifford could really fly up boards even more than he already is because I think his swing is beautiful. We both love Reimer, even though it's he's kind of got to get a little better at some things.
Yes.
He's got to hit for more power and play better defense, really. He has a good floor, but
this is another spot where I do this all the time. I don't know why this is a thing I always do. I want to combine Jacob Reimer and Ryan Clifford's skill sets because holy fuck, that dude would be like,
well, they'd be the best prospect in the system.
They'd be like a top 10 prospect in baseball as a first baseman, and it wouldn't matter. That'd be disgusting.
Yeah, for real.
Let me ask you on Clifford, because I went back and forth on this. Clifford was obviously excellent in high A with Houston, not great in high A at Brooklyn with the Mets after the trade, but he did get, you know, something like 400 plate appearances at the level, and the overall line is good. Brooklyn is a particularly bad place to hit, both because of the wind knocking everything down, and also, as I understand it, the left-handed hitter batter eye is suboptimal, shall we say.
Yeah, it's like, it goes into, like, for those who don't know the area, there's, like, an amusement park right there because it's Coney Island. It, like, kind of goes above a little bit the batter's eye, and you could see, like, into the amusement park for lefties, so I couldn't imagine trying to hit as a left-handed hitter. Yeah, it's, like, a little too short, I guess, the batter's eye, but yeah, I mean, are you saying promote him anyway, even though he was bad?
Yeah, that's what I'm wondering, is that environment detrimental enough that it's worth promoting him out and seeing, you know, what he could do there at Binghamton? I don't know, but I don't know that he's ready for Binghamton yet is the problem. So I
would rather keep him there and let him work on some things a little bit more and then move him up midseason. I don't think there's much. I think there's more detriment you could do to being overly aggressive with a guy than being overly conservative. Like, I very much agree. Like, I think the Dodgers are a great example of that, but I think they do it for different reasons. But they overcook prospects like crazy. But I think it's because they have no place to play anyone because they sign every good player. Mm-hmm. So there's no place for the prospects to play. But I would rather be a little conservative. And if he goes to Brooklyn and tears the cover off the ball anyway, batter's eye be damned, then you just promote him. Like, he's not making the Mets this year anyway, so it doesn't really matter to me.
No.
Like, it's more like I get more antsy with conservatism when it's at the top. When, like, if Drew Gilbert's hitting, like, 350.
Now, Thomas, let's not get political on this podcast.
You know what I mean. I didn't even think about that. But, like... Like, I'd be more mad if Drew Gilbert's, like, hitting 350 and bad. No, they're just not calling him up. And I'm like, bro, please, come on. Like,
Starling Marte, like, is crawling in right field. His groins do not function. Please.
I just think Brooklyn is – I think he's fine at Brooklyn for now. Mm-hmm. And I think that – I think a guy like him, a guy like Sproat, if McLean keeps pitching well, a guy like them, they could all end up in Binghamton by the end of the season.
You would hope that, I mean, Reimer, Sproat, McLean, I would hope all get promoted, and then Clifford as well. Those are the four I have asterisks on as promotions. Now, Cade Morris and Zach, the Mets drafted a whole list of college pitchers last year, several of whom are interesting. I put the two that I think are most interesting in Cade Morris and Zach Thornton here. Don't have a ton more to say. Like, they both have good IVB. We've not seen either in spring, or I haven't been paying close enough attention.
No, but I haven't. If it has, it hasn't been a lot. I don't remember enough of their spring.
There's stuff to like here. You know, this is usually where you send your college pitchers. If you want to get excited about, like, Wyatt Hudepohl or something as well, like, probably going to be here. Another spot that should have some good pitching depth, but then also a deeper pool of position players to watch, and also Alex Ramirez. Do you have anything to say about Alex Ramirez?
I thought when I saw him a few times in spring, and I thought it looked a little cleaner overall. I think it looked like he did kind of quiet down some stuff, but he has to actually do it in games for an extended period of time. Yeah. I'm not ready to, like, take him out of the top 25. But if he's not good this year, I might, because we don't like if the Mets start drafting better with a better draft apparatus and more pitching jumps from other guys, then it might we might be having him just kind of gone from
might just be done with his profile generally. Yeah.
Yeah. Honestly, yeah, it might just be kind of a profile that we don't look at anymore in this way because of how the Mets, how the organization is moving. But it's kind of, I don't want to say make or break a year for a guy who's 21 because that's ridiculous, but you need to see some type of jump from him.
At I don't think
some,
that's a ridiculous something. Statement at all. Like, I think this is, you, yeah, he's on the 40. I, like, if he yeah, has another yeah, bad
he
year.
Is on the 40. Like, you're going like, to DFA him, and then
yeah.
that's it. Like, yeah, that's true.
I mean, he's the there's 40. A chance he gets DFA'd when they need to add Scott. Like, that's where we're at.
It's true. If he's bad in July and you're calling guys up and putting guys on the 40 or June or whatever, he might be a casualty because you're not taking a guy who you want to promote to the Mets off the 40 because
no,
like, and then again, who's claiming him to do that anyway? Like, I guess someone
could. The Royals. Good luck.
Yeah.
Chip, Cyclones roster, I think two of the more interesting developmental college
arms. Junior Tillian might be there. And he's
how did I forget Junior Tillian? That's a very good call out.
He was a guy that people were excited about. William Lugo was a guy that people were excited about and like kind of fell off, but you know how these things go. Omar De Los Santos is going to steal every base.
Like, he's going to steal every base and strike out and 50% of the time.
It's he's like a fun player to like watch. And like think about, but he's not a prospect. He's just fun because he runs fast.
Yes. This roster should be very interesting, and there's going to be more talent bubbling up from below. I think Thomas, you've hit the nail on the head here with Sproat and McLean being the highlights, but Clifford and our personal favorite Reimer also interesting to follow. Continuing down here, I had a hard time delineating things between St. Lucie and the complex, because all of a sudden the Mets just have somehow a jillion guys down here. The ones I currently
I don't even know how you're going to do this. Like, I don't know how you even separated them at this point. Looking at the names, I'm like, yeah.
The ones I've listed at St. Lucie right now, Marco Vargas, and Ronald Hernandez, who the Mets got for David Robinson last year, along with Colin Houck and A.J. Ewing. Houck and Ewing.
Calvin Ziegler.
So Ziegler's healthy. That's a good call. Yep, he should be here editing the article in real time. You could also put Boston Barrow up here. You know, the only way I've delineated this right now are, you know, domestic prep shortstops versus all the IFA guys who are going to be coming over. There's a lot of middle infield talent here. We really like Marco Vargas. I think we both like Boston Barrow. AJ Ewing is interesting. Colin Houck was a first round pick. And
it's really funny with Houck because like if we were doing this 5 years ago and it was the Mets 5 years ago drafting Houck, he'd be like sixth in the system. And we're like, but it's just, it's hard to even place him. It's not even like he did anything wrong. He just barely played and didn't play all that well. And then he got lapped by all these guys who they traded for and developed and stuff. It's kind of, I'm interested to see what he does in a full season though, because I have no idea what to expect out of him.
Yep. So just keep your eyes on the middle infield here. Really, Marco Vargas and Ronald Hernandez, I think both get promotions to Brooklyn at some point, if all goes according to plan. We really like both of those guys. I would expect to see them with the Cyclones, you know, after the All-Star break about that time. The other guys, not so much. They should be percolating down here all year, barring a huge breakout.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Now, again, this border is really fuzzy because going to the FCL Mets, this trend continues. We've got Jeremy Rodriguez, Jesus Baez, Branny Diolio, all his shortstops. We have Simon Juan and Anthony Baptiste in the outfield. Simon Juan, Liam Murphy flagged this for me on Twitter earlier today, yesterday, has had some interesting exit velo numbers on the backfields this year.
Really?
This spring training. Yep. So it might be something there. Anthony Baptiste has a huge performer in the DSL, like a guy we almost certainly should have rated in our top 25.
Yeah, we probably should have.
Yeah, I mean, but we don't have visibility into that, and that's just our process. Yeah. And then, you know, the one prep arm the Mets took in John Val Jr., I think there's a junior in there somewhere, but any and all, I don't know how you sort through all these guys. I don't know how you divvy up the middle infield playing time, who's playing second, who's playing third, who's playing, you know, games on in the, you know, at the team facilities as opposed to on the complex roster. There's a lot of talent here to watch, though. Even Jesus Baez did some interesting stuff this spring from what I saw after a down 2023. So I have to admit, I think the Mets have constructed their system, and I don't know if this was by design, but I like the shape of the Mets system, right? They have all these college pitchers who they have advanced data on, and they're taking those traits and molding them. Those mostly sit, you know, the middle, the top of the system. And then the position player depth is a lot of longer burn plays based on, you know, tool or athleticism upside. How did I combine those two words? Which I think is why when we're talking about Syracuse, Binghamton, Brooklyn, there's a lot of pitching. And then down here, it's almost all position players. This just seems the more logical way to build out your farm system. I don't know if you have any opinion on that front.
No, I definitely I do tend to like, I chose a prep pitcher for my drafting, but I do tend to like college pitchers a little bit more because pitching, man, it's just so like you get hurt and then that could be it.
Yeah.
Like, we're going to talk about him a little bit with Matthew Allen, but like they're it's risky to see what a pitcher could do from 18 to 23 when they come up. Like there's so much stuff that could happen. But when you take a college junior who is throwing all these things, then they could be up in a year and a half and then they're pitching for you, because pitching, it's like there's more that could go wrong. And I feel like it's less of a jump to make it go really right, because you could do a few things and then they're a different player. But with hitting, it's like, I agree that it's just, that's how you get philosophies in, and that's how you get swing changes in, and that's how you get like Ronald Hernandez. I'm just pulling a name, or even Colin Howe. Like he's beating the ball into the ground right now, right?
Yeah.
At 18, it's a lot easier for him to learn how to hit up and do all this stuff that to optimize his swing than it is for a 24-year-old who went to 4 years of college and was like, or 3 years of college and like did it with a ping bat his way or the way that he was taught, and then you have to relearn everything at like 22. It's a lot easier to do that as a high school kid, you know?
Just an offhand comment. Can we lock all these guys in a room or like in a cabin?
With J.D. Martin?
Yeah, for just like a couple days. Just see what happens. Have a little trap door in the top, drop them some food and water every once in a while, and just let them learn via osmosis from living with JD Martinez for a couple days. I guarantee you're going to see some jumps in the hitting prospects this season.
For real.
So yeah, very difficult to project with any certainty what's going to happen down here. Going to be some interesting position players to keep an eye on. Okay, so I said we're not going to do the DSL because I refuse to speculate about the DSL. You can't even watch the DSL. If you can, what are you doing watching the DSL? Like, do you do this professionally? we don't do that. Like, please do not watch the DSL. A couple others of notes, though, I threw on here. Ronnie Mauricio is obviously hurt. I expect he'll be back by the end of the season. Probably go straight to, you know, get a little St. Lucie time and then go to Syracuse and hang out there until the Mets give him another shot, if there's even room for him. Anthony DiComo had a really good piece on Matt Allen recently, talking about the various injuries he's gone through, the first Tommy John, the nerve transposition, the Tommy John revision. He might be out all of this season as well, but there's a chance he gets back on the mound, and I would hope to see him, you know, at the complex or St. Lucie at some point this year. Those are the two injured guys. The one DSL name I'll highlight, and the Mets obviously signed a full class of DSL players, including a couple other guys in MLB's top 50 or whatever. But the best one is catcher Yovani Rodriguez, already getting some good reports on him, better than Gutierrez, the top-level catcher they signed last year. Who isn't on this list anywhere, as you can tell. But Rodriguez is supposed to have some good traits, worth monitoring what he does in the DSL. Again, please do not go watch DSL games. You do not need to be doing that with your time. Anyone else I missed, Thomas, you think?
I guess Vientos, because he's going to be in AAA. And
no, he's not prospect eligible anymore.
Oh, that's true. He's so then.
Yes, I'm saved from having to add Vientos anywhere.
But in all seriousness, like, I know we're kind of have prospect fatigue with him for real, but like, he's going to be in AAA. Let's see if he does actually do anything that's different, make more contact in the zone or what have you, because it is a bit of a more optimized organization than it has been while he's been coming up. But I can't really think of anything else. Like, Ronnie Mauricio, I want to see him healthy. Allen, I would love to see him healthy. Rodriguez is an interesting shout because the reports are pretty interesting.
So that's the rough guide for where you can find the most interesting parts of the system. We'll, of course, comment when the official rosters are released, which should come in the next couple weeks. The minor league season doesn't get started until a couple weeks after the major league one, which is why we'll be doing bold predictions next week as opposed to this one. So I think that wraps up that portion of things, and I think that will also wrap up our show. If, as always, you can... listener, subscribe to this and all the other Home Run Applesauce podcasts through Apple Podcasts or any other platform. It'd be great if you could review and rate the show, please. You can also listen on Spotify or wherever else. You can visit the Patreon for bonus episodes and also help directly support the podcasters throughout the network. We are planning on doing a couple early season Patreon exclusive things. Brian's working on that, hopefully coming out in the next couple days or next week. In the interim, if you have any questions, comments, or concerns, you can email the show at fromcomplextoqueens@gmail.com. You can also follow us on Twitter. Steve is at Steve Saipa. I am at ElVlahos343. Ken is at KenLavin91. And Thomas is at SadMetsSDN. Until next week, love the Mets. Love the Mets.